saw broken glass and cigarette butts and camo briefs strewn across the floor. She withdrew into the bedroom, quietly closing the door. "The yelling is everywhere," she said. "Too loud." It was then that Lucia started to spend more time away. She liked Central Park, Coney Island, the beach at Far Rockaway, the cloisters up north. On her 30th birthday, she invited 6 of her friends to the store and made 5 pounds of our mother's spare ribs, basted with honey and garlic and 5-spice powder. She baked them in the commercial oven, and when burning drippings set off the sprinkler system in the kitchen, Yona cursed and roared. "Shit pig in my oven," he said. Then he cursed again, but in Hebrew, and not at her. We mopped while Lucia sat in the cafe with her friends, and afterward Yona disappeared into the bedroom until I came to inform him it was time for cake.
"Lucia, she wants a baby," he said.
"A baby?" His prosthetic arm sat by itself on a chair. He closed the bedroom door to shut the twin mattress from our view.
"I am 45, he said. "I have 2 children. I love them, but I know myself. I'm done. I can't have no more. Johnny, he is lost. He need to find something for himself. I am his father. I need to help him."
He coughed and heaved. His body sagged. The left sleeve of his t-shirt barely covered his stump, and I found myself looking away. He was a middle-aged man, struggling.
"She never say she want kids before," he said. "Yeah, we need a different life."
It was true. Lucia had never been particularly maternal. Though she'd longed all her life for the slew of aunties and uncles and cousins we never had, she had not spoken about babies or children or motherhood with any kind of affection. Now she fawned over Haka and Noemi's baby boy. "Will you have a baby with the elk?" she asked me. I blushed. "I don't know," I said. "I want a baby," she said. My throat went dry. I said, "Babies are a lot of responsibility." Several months passed. Spring came. Yona brought home a curly-haired black-and-tan puppy from a shelter on the Upper West Side. Lucia named him Lucky. "You can meet him," she said. "You could bring the elk, too." The thought made me nervous. But I planned a trip. We would attend a gallery opening in Chelsea. "Visit the store afterward," I told Stefan. And when we did, there was Yona, smoking outside on the berry red bench. And there was the curly-haired black-and-tan puppy, who trotted over to pee at our feet.
"Cock shit," said Yona.
Stefan glanced at me. An enormous crane dangled above us. Yellow construction vehicles blocked the street. Jersey barriers lined the sidewalks in front of the store, and the Polish diner next door, and the swanky new wine bar that had replaced City Video. The air was swamped in dirt and noise. Lucky didn't mind. He licked his balls.
"Cocker spaniel shih tzu," said Yona.
He grinned with his wide duck lips. "Oh," I said, bending down to pet Lucky's bearded face.
"Long time, Jay,"
said Yona, laughing.
"Welcome, welcome."
He embraced Stefan. "They're really building up this neighborhood," I said. I shielded my eyes to take in the steel scaffolding rising up from the corner of the street. Apparently, the yuppie developers had finagled their 6 extra stories of air rights from someone else in the neighborhood. "Is Lucia inside?" I asked.
"Lucy? She's not here."
"Oh, where is she?" My casual words failed to hide my disappointment. Stefan squeezed my hand.
"She went shopping, I think."
Lucia hated shopping. Yona invited us inside, where the cafe tables were coated with a thin layer of dust.
"Konnichiwa,"
he said to Mrs. Sato, who sat alone with her long-haired Pomeranian.
"Ciao, ciao," I said.
He brought us peppermint green tea and pound cake.
Lucy, she want to move out, he said.
What? He saw the shock on my face. What? Where?
I don't know. Out.
He coughed.
She needs something different. She is woman. She want a baby. This is what she says.
But she wouldn't do that, I said. She loves it here. She would never do that. Unless she was crazy. I did not voice this last thought aloud. That evening, Lucia called me from Long Island. Long Island? What are you doing on Long Island? I said. I'm swimming, she said. And in the background, it wasn't her husband anymore, but the roar of waves. I'm at the beach. Listen, it's beautiful here. Our mother always said Lucia was different. Restless, wild, born on American soil. Why does Chinese girl born in America want to visit poor countries all the time? Ayya! For years I tried to defend my sister's free spirit as a tenacious form of American idealism, which I both respected and admired. But as of late, I could no longer decipher Lucia's motivations, what was happening inside her head. Perhaps Yana felt the same.
She want a baby,
he said.
I won't give her a baby. Who am I to keep her from going, Jie?
Perhaps he was tired. Or perhaps he was wise. Or perhaps it was a permutation of love I did not yet understand. He made no effort to stop her. I made no attempt to change his mind. I wondered if he was out of my life. She moved out, up north, to a sleepy town in Westchester. She was determined to meet the future father of her child. I tried to reason with her. Parenting is difficult. All those sleepless nights. What about your life with Yona in the city? What about the store? What about your work, your writing, your career? What about it? She said. The crying, I said. Babies cry. Children are a lot of work. A lot of responsibility. I recalled Third Uncle's basement. Lucia squawking, red-faced. She shrugged. Finally, I raised my voice. I called her rash, reckless, irresponsible. It's my life, she said. I can love a baby. She began to avoid my calls. Nothing would change her mind. I moved in with Stefan. We rented a cozy three-bedroom house in a suburb south of Boston. We cooked. We watched movies. We planted rose bushes. We built a deck. We read books in our lawn chairs, discussed over wine, spent Sunday mornings mulling over the crossword in bed. I set up an easel in the shady part of the yard, painted while listening to the Beatles or NPR. I lived my own life. And for months on end I did not speak to Lucia. The longest time without contact in our lives. I would cherish this luxury of finding contentment in the mundane. Revel in it like a guilty pleasure. One day, Yona called. He said,
Lucia call me from hospital.
He said that was all he understood. The policeman said when they found her she was calling for a young girl to come down from a tree. She spoke in soft, soothing tones, switching from language to language. Chinese, the policeman assumed, and Spanish and maybe Hebrew and Portuguese. Except there was no young girl up in the tree. Lucia had taken off her dress and her tights, placed them on the grass and spread the sleeves at right angles, like an X.
Lie, lie, she called. Come down. Ici.
She waved, shivering in her underwear, pointing to the target as though a parachutist might land there.
Please, miss, said the policeman. Pardon, senorita. Do you speak English?
She turned to the policeman and said,
Excuse me, sir. I speak cyberspace.
And then she screamed and screamed. I did not tell Yona that story. I did not tell him because I was afraid he would fight me again, even though Lucia had already moved north and out of his life. I steeled myself against him. I would fight, and he would not win this time. He didn't fight. When I visited the hospital, he was there. I don't know how he got there, to Westchester. He seemed so out of place in middle suburbia. It was the first time he had seen her in several months. She was thin. He'd brought her favorite vegan chocolate orange pound cake, and she ate it with delight. She had taken a pill that day, and as a reward, or an act of good faith, the bony blonde doctor wrote her a pass that allowed her to go outside. "If you try to run," she warned, "the police will come get you." It was a warm fall day, I remember. We didn't think she would bolt. We mostly trusted she would not. Except for that small part of us that was afraid we didn't know this Lucia anymore, the things of which she was capable. So we clenched our teeth as she was released to the front lawn, and she dashed out at full speed, jumping into the piles of red and brown and yellow leaves the landscapers had left in neat piles. She spun around and around with her arms outstretched.
"This is so beautiful," she said, making herself dizzy.
We clambered after her with long strides, breaking into a jog when she leapt too far ahead, like parents chasing after a child. We watched as she climbed a tree. Yona hoisted her up so she could grab a low branch, and she scrabbled up the trunk with her feet. She sat on that low branch for a while, twisting her neck around like a bird, surveying from her new vantage point. We sat on a bench. Yona kept checking his watch.
20 more minutes, he said.
He did not want her to fall into disfavor with the bony blonde doctor, and neither did I.
15 minutes.
She acted like she hadn't heard, humming to herself in the tree.
10 minutes,
he said. And I nodded at him, and we stood, erect like soldiers. "Lucy, it's time to go inside now," we said.
"Why, Yo-Yo, what's the time?" she said,
a flippancy I disliked.
3:20,
Yona said.
10 more minutes,
she said, as she swung her dangling legs. We were anxious.
"Lucy, you shouldn't be late,"
Yona said, in that paternal tone that used to infuriate me. She looked at him, leaned forward, bending to hug that low branch until her entire body lay horizontal. And then she lurched her legs and flipped over, landing 2 feet on the ground.
"Perfect 10,
he said, and she slapped him a high five, beaming. 6 minutes, I said. We escorted her back up the sidewalk path, past the security guard, up the elevator. The bony blonde doctor looked stern when we arrived.
"What's this I hear?"
she said to Lucia.
"About you being up in a tree?"
Yona and I looked at each other, confused.
"One of the guards said he saw you up in a tree."
Lucia's eyes dimmed. "I didn't do anything wrong," she said. And Yona said,
"She didn't do nothing wrong. She climbed a tree. We was there. We was there with her. She didn't do nothing wrong."
And I nodded, until the doctor raised her eyebrows, squinted her beady green eyes, and said, "Humph."
"Ostrich,"
he said, later. I drove him to the train station, half an hour away, where he would take the Metro North to the 1 to the F. "Thank you," I said. He hugged me. He said,
"Take care, Gia."
4 days later, I was informed by a social worker that Lucia's treatment team was planning her discharge. I drove immediately back to Westchester from Boston. Stefan came with me this time. And though I cringed at the thought of their introduction taking place in the hospital, I also did not want to go alone.
"She's calm," said the social, a plump but prim woman, pink and middle-aged.
She led us down a maze of hallways to her office. The ostrich was nowhere in sight.
"Is she taking her meds?" "She's taken a few doses of Risperdal," on and off.
Risperdal?
I shook my head, confused.
But she was on Zyprexa before. Risperdal hasn't really worked for her in the past.
The social frowned.
We often offer it as a first-line antipsychotic.
She says she'll consider outpatient care.
Consider?
I balked at the word.
But does she have insight? Does she understand what's happened? I'd like to speak with the attending psychiatrist, please.
The attending is indisposed today, said the social. Your sister is calm. We can't keep her here. Why don't you see for yourself?
We were shown to the visitor's lounge, where Lucia sat working on a jigsaw puzzle. When she saw me, a glint of light flashed in her eyes. Lucia, this is Stefan, I said. Stefan, my sister Lucia.
Nice to meet you,
said Stefan.
Lucia's face darkened. She studied Stefan's outstretched hand but did not shake it.
So, this is the elk, she said,
with a silly smirk I did not recognize. And inside I felt my heart cave.
I'm getting out, she said.
Yes, I heard. We attempted to make small talk.
Have you eaten lunch yet? What did you do in group today? Have you been going outside?
Her answers, curt, though intelligible. And do you have a plan, I asked, for what you're going to do next?
A plan? I'll get a job.
She folded her arms, tilted back in her chair.
What kind of work do you do?
Asked Stefan.
Oh, I can do a lot of work. Mostly writing, reading, research. I ask a lot of questions, you know.
I heard you worked in Bolivia for a while,
he said.
Yeah,
she said, and her eyes relit as they chatted about the salt flats and flamingos and markets and choclos and the altitude in La Paz.
Here's a question, she said.
A good one. Are you two going to make babies? She pointed at us with two waggling fingers. Now Stefan was taken aback, I could see, and my discomfort hung, tangible in the air, as Lucia scrutinized our faces and we said nothing.
Wait, what? You're not? Well, that seems kind of useless.
A hardness behind her eyes I did not understand. What was it? Contempt? Arrogance? By the time we left the building, I was on the verge of tears. That's not her, Stefan.
What do you mean?
He said.
It's not her. That's not my sister. I swear to you, Lucia has never acted that way to me. Not ever.
She wasn't that bad,
he said.
That's not her. That's her illness. And did you hear that social worker? She didn't even give a shit. What the fuck are they thinking, giving her Risperdal?
I slumped to the curb, face in my knees. Stefan knelt down beside me, an arm around my shoulders.
You've done what you can, Satsley. Honestly, she seemed all right to me.
But that's not her, Stefan. One minute she's sweet, the next she's snide.
She's not stable. It's like she's fighting some demon inside. He did not understand. How could he? But he gathered me in his arms, pressed my head to his chest, kissed my hair. He let me cry and cry, unfazed. That night, back in Boston, I watched the rise and fall of his ribcage as he slept.
Are you two going to make babies?
Guilt stuck in my throat. I closed my eyes, but images of Tennessee filled my head.
Luciano, ma'am?
Are you sure?
The filing clerk, a perky golden hair with breasts like balloons.
Lucy, ma. Tell them, Lucy.
What, Nirar?
Like, I love Lucy.
The infant, sticky with drool, in my 7-year-old arms.
Ma'am? I'm pretty sure Luciano is a boy's name. You want me to change it?
What is it? I don't understand.
How about
L-U-C-I-A. There, that's better, ma'am.
Ma, squinting.
Lucia? Lucia, ma'am. Lucia. Oh, that's pretty, don't you think?
The baby began to whine and thrash.
Ma?
Okay, okay. Lucia, good name. Thank you.
When I woke in the morning, Stefan was reading a book in bed. Sweetheart, I said, I need to ask you something.
What is it?
He said. I drew a long breath. Do you want to have more children?
Well,
I could see the Swiss in him strive for diplomacy.
My ex and I were so young.
Because I don't want to have children.
I blurted it straight out.
Just like that. These were not easy words, nor easy emotions, demanding a self-evaluation I would have preferred to avoid. I clutched my blanket, cold and clammy with sweat.
I thought you should know.
He blinked, slowly. He took my hand. If it rattled him, he did not show it.
Why not?
But I did not know what to say. That I was cold? Unnatural? Perhaps I was selfish? That any maternal instinct I possessed did not come naturally, though responsibility had been sown in me from an early age?
Your mother,
he said, quietly.
And now, your sister.
I nodded. This is worse. My voice, hoarse and strange. At least with my mother's illness, I knew what to do. This feels impossible. His lower jaw protruded as he tapped his teeth, a nervous habit I still found endearing.
She seemed okay.
He kissed my forehead.
I think everything will be okay, Miranda.
Jia, do you believe in happily ever after?
I wanted to. I did. 2 months later, Stefan asked me to move with him to Switzerland. My first instinct, to call my sister. I dialed her number but quickly hung up. I wanted this decision to be mine. Alone. And I wanted to believe. That winter, Lucia moved into a house full of Ecuadorians. The shared cooking and communal living suited her. I wondered if Yona ever thought she would come back to him. One time she visited the store, on her way to Chinatown for a haircut, and he called me from her phone.
Guess who's here?
He said. He cooked shakshuka and brought her tempeh and beets and yogurt-covered pretzels. It was almost like old times. One day in February, I was back in the East Village, having lunch with an old colleague. At the end of the street, the brand-new luxury apartment building was open, shiny with glass and chrome. It housed a gym on the first floor, where young people sweated on state-of-the-art elliptical machines. I walked past the store, then past it again in the other direction. I did this 3 times before walking in.
Yeah,
said Yona, his smile stretched wide. He was bouncing Haka and Noemi's little boy up and down on his chest.
Long time.
Yes, long time, I said. I gave him a quick hug. He brought me tea and cake. The cafe was nearly empty. White icicle lights blinked from the tropical-looking plants. Ella Fitzgerald played. Yona had lost weight. He said business had been slow, ever since the 20,000-square-foot gourmet market had opened a few blocks away.
How's everything?
He said.
What's news?
I'm moving to Switzerland, I said. Stefan's start date had been confirmed. He would be working at a hospital outside of Zurich. We would leave at the end of the summer.
Wow, Switzerland,
he said, his eyes wide.
You will go on a big adventure.
I think so, I said. I'd been once already, and Stefan's family were lovely and kind and terribly civilized. The sort of family who congregated for dinner every Sunday at Grossmutti's house. We'd visited Stefan's son, too, at his boarding school in Austria. An awkward scene, with Rafi clearly preferring the company of his Nintendo Game Boy to mine. Until the suggestion of tennis was made. Then Rafi perked up, and we played one set while Stefan tried valiantly to remain impartial, including me in their fist bumps and back thumps. Their affection sweet. Even as Rafi emerged the victor. 6-4. But I struggled, too, because I would be the one to leave Lucia this time. An ocean between us. Stefan consoled me, insisted without reservation.
Miranda, you need to live your own life. Have you heard from Lucia? How is she?
Said Yona. I did not wish to worry him, so I said she seemed fine. I told myself it could be true. Her response to my news had been uncharacteristically flat. A,
yeah, really?
With neither approval nor disapproval, only incredulity. She lived north of the city now, and was involved with another man. Just a kid, really. A Latino no more than 25, with smooth brown skin and strong cheekbones. He shook my hand sheepishly, lowering his eyes, the one time that I met him. And I'd struggled, I admit, averted my gaze, tried like mad to bat away the unsettling images popping up in my mind. Of him and Lucia fucking like rabbits. He did not offer me tea or cake.
Yona, how are you? I asked.
Oh, fine, fine. Good, good. Everything is good here, he said. Some director and actors, they want to make a movie in the store. Maybe the store is gonna be famous soon.
He showed me the new countertop he'd built for the juice bar. The new shelves. New art.
I fix up the apartment, too, he said.
The twin mattress was gone. The bed had been moved to the living room. It was covered with a thick wool bedspread with a lion on it, and on the opposite wall hung a 50-inch flat-screen TV. Where is Johnny? I asked. And Yona told me proudly that his son had just started the semester at a cooking school in Albany. I looked around again. The old bedroom had been converted into a proper office, with a new desk and filing cabinets and a computer that Noemi used to keep the books.
See, I am learning English,
Yona said, showing me his pirated version of Rosetta Stone. I felt proud of him, though I eyed the ashtrays, which were still full. And he said he was trying. He really was. So I told him about a hypnotist up in Boston who was said to produce excellent results. He opened a new closet with a mirrored sliding door.
See?
He pointed to the top shelf, where Lucia had left her collection of oddly shaped pillows, some shoes, some books, a bag of her small, girly clothes. His shirts and sweaters and heavy winter coat were organized neatly on hangers.
You want to see something?
He said.
Sure,
I said. So he pushed the shirts and sweaters and coat far to the right. And there on the left wall of the closet, he'd carefully hung two paintings. The globby brown duck above the yellow goose.
Remember?
He said. Yes, I said.
Cape Cod,
he said. And for one brief moment he could not conceal the pain in his smile. I asked to use the bathroom. It too had been remodeled, with light green mosaic tiles, though dust bunnies stuck in the corners and his camo briefs still lay on the floor. When I came out, he was sitting on the lion bedspread. His head hung low. I sat down next to him, straight and still. Our mother might have said this, that immigrants are the strongest, that we leave our homes behind and rebuild. Everywhere we go, we rebuild. We sat for a long time. We sat with weight in bent torsos, without burden of words. And when at last he looked up, I caught his eye, and he reached over to place his good hand on mine, and it was rough and dry and warm.
Cheer,
he said, I'm sorry. My words, barely a whisper. He did not say more, but it occurred to me then. This Yona is my family. We are bound, for better or worse.
Chapter 2. Manuel.
I met Lucia at the Big Apple laundromat on Main Street. I was there to do my monthly wash. She was looking for a room. Gadlos saw her first. Serge whistled. Hector yanked my head out of the dryer. "That one," he said, pointing. She had short hair and peach skin, wore big silver hoop earrings, browsed the flyers on the bulletin board, rubbing a pink panty to her chin. I noticed her calves, their shape, not thick like the white girls or spindly like the Latinas, and the smooth notches in her shoulders where the bra straps sit, and those tetas, just enough. Round and tender, the kind you want to test for firmness like a fruit, feel the weight of them settle in your fingers. She said, "Eres ecuatoriano?" "Sí," I said. "How did you know?" She said, "I love Ecuador." She had taught English in Quito once, tutored school kids in Guayaquil. "Happy times," she said. Smiled wide, and her teeth were white and lined up straight, so I knew she was an American. 26 minutes, she said. She licked her lips, and I went rock hard. She pointed to a dryer. "Enough time for a drink," I said. "Why not?" she said. I liked her pretty chinita eyes, all shiny with surprise, like the world was still new, or maybe she just bumped into something. I ducked into the bathroom, scrubbed my hands, washed my face, patted my hair with baby oil. "Yeah, Manny," said Hector. Serge and Carlos pounded me on the back with their fists. We walked down the street to the Dominican bar where they serve $2 beers and play bachata, and I saw she could move her hips. I invited her to my house. We lived 11 of us in 4 rooms. Not all related, but we called ourselves Vargas. We said we were cousins. It made us feel safe. A week later, she moved into the 5th room, the largest, with sloped ceilings on the 3rd floor at the top of the stairs. We scotch-taped her name to the mailbox. She paid 1 month's rent. Brought in a plastic-wrapped futon mattress, a metal dresser, 2 suitcases, a TV, a bunch of appliances packed in a garbage bag, 3 milk crates full of files. She went shopping at C-Mart, filled the refrigerator with vegetables, the freezer with meats, her bedroom with banana plants. She put her rice cooker in the kitchen. The thing was shaped like an egg, but opened up like a toilet. Cooked 12 cups of rice at one time. She made tofu stir-fry with rice, fried rice with shrimp, sticky rice with pork. Shared with us, though Serge and Carlos didn't eat tofu, and Susie didn't eat shrimp, and Hector ate mostly beans. We made rice and beans with plantains, rice and beans with steak, sopa de pollo with cilantro and rice. We sat in the kitchen, eating. Watched the small TV on the counter next to the microwave. Carlos said, "No wonder we get along. Chinas and Latinos, inside we are the same, full of rice." A week later, I took her out on a date, brought her to the Ecuadorian buffet. The place had no name, only a blinking red-yellow-blue sign. Comida típica. Inside, it smelled spicy, like cilantro and cumin and vinegar. She made neat piles on her plate, a little of everything. Went back for seconds. Her favorite was spicy goat stew. Later, we stopped at the Dominican bar. They were playing salsa, so I asked her to dance. And Chinita was some great dancer. Light as a bird, nailed the turns, responded to the slightest touch. Then we walked in the night, and her dark eyes glowed. And just when I wondered if I should grab her hand, she slipped hers into mine. All the way down Main Street, I was sucked into that hand. She rubbed my thumb with her thumb, stroked my palm with her finger. The rest of my body dangled, like extra. We passed the pizza palace, packed with loud teenagers, and the hardware store, and the barber shop, and the Korean grocery that sold back scratchers and flowers and toilet brushes, all in those tall buckets outside. El Pollo Loco was standing in front of the police station. "Chiquita bonita," he said, bowing. Chinita dropped my hand to slap his wing a high five. Pollo was one of those neighborhood characters, wore a giant chicken suit and walked up and down Main Street every day. His costume had no feathers. It was like rubber, pale, a bloated version of what you find in the poultry aisle, raw, sad, plucked. They said he showed up after the first Gulf War. I saw him wandering the streets, or down by the train station, or along the playing fields next to the river. It was some spectacular view there, especially at sunset, the Tappan Zee Bridge over the Hudson. Sometimes, El Pollo Loco stopped to talk. Mostly he talked to himself. Once, on the hottest day of summer, I saw him take off that giant yellow chicken head, carry it under his wing, like a helmet. That time, I saw his face. It wasn't old or dirty. He was, like, handsome. Almost. And then a couple of the local businesses started paying him to hand out flyers. Pizza joints and sushi restaurants and Italian bakeries. Places that didn't even sell chicken. But they made him keep his chicken head on. Some things don't make any sense. "Está loco," I said to Lucia. "Why?" she said. "Because he's friendly?" Her forehead creased right between her eyebrows. Sexy. We crossed the street. This I noticed about Lucia. She was kind. And with her, instead of my usual slouch, eyes down, I noticed more of what was around. First time we made love was up in her room, under her banana plants. She was good with her hands, liked to give head. Then our bodies pressed together, and it was like falling into warm, soft bread. After, we looked up, fronds above us like a lush green canopy. She said, "Imagine esmeraldas." We would climb coconut trees, spear squid, lie in hammocks listening to waves. Never been to Esmeraldas, but I saw my youngest brother Freddy, born retarded, with a defective heart, and Mommy chasing chickens, and Papi knee-deep in mud from the wet season. One day, Lucia said, "Come with me to Ecuador." "I don't have papers," I said. I'd never told an American before. But this girl was Chinita Americana, different somehow. I trusted her. Anyway, it was no big surprise. "Do you miss your family?" she asked. "Yes," I said. She looked at me, like waiting to hear a story. "I love my family," I said. "I have more tías and tíos and cousins than you can count. Like enough for an entire village." "When I was little, I thought I had 7 grandmothers," she said. "One on each continent." "Why?" "Why not?" She didn't say any more, but she smiled. 2 days later, the phone rang in the kitchen. I answered it. She said, "I am in Ecuador." "Ha ha, bet you are," I said. She was joking for sure. Figured she was visiting friends in the city, but then she didn't come home that night. 2 days later, the phone rang again. "I am in Esmeraldas," she said. And this time, I believed her. "Manny, I am blindingly happy," she said. "When are you coming back?" she said. "Maybe I will stay in Ecuador forever." One day, a woman knocked on our door. She wore a dark blue suit. I was afraid. I thought she could be with police. She tapped her foot, stared at our mailbox, all the names ending in Vargas. She said, I am Lucia's sister. Is Lucia here? Where is Lucia? She stood straight. Her head seemed to float. Hair scraped back so tight it stretched out her face. She looked too old and too serious to be Lucia's sister. But I knew she wasn't lying, because she had Lucia's eyes. I said, Lucia is in Ecuador. She nodded, raised one hand to her chin. I could tell she didn't believe it. Is she all right? She asked. I think so. Has she been acting strange? I don't think so. I invited her in, showed her up to Lucia's room. I'd been sleeping up there instead of with Carlos and Serge, so my clothes were everywhere. How long has she been away? She asked. Maybe 2 weeks? Then she looked me up and down, squinting, like my body hid a clue. She dug around in her purse, tore a sheet of paper from her notebook and wrote something down, pushed it into my hand. If she is acting strange, please call me, she said. A week later, two men knocked on our door. I opened it. They said, we are police. They held up their badges. I was the only one home. They came inside, stamping dirt on the floor with their heavy black shoes. Mind if we look around? Said one. I knew it wasn't a question, so I didn't answer. Didn't say a word. I stood like a stone, next to a mop, in the corner of the kitchen by the pantry, where it smelled like mildew and rice. Thought I could run outside, duck behind the hydrangeas, or jump into the dumpster in the back alley. I'd rehearsed these routes in my head before, but they seemed childish and stupid now. I tried to pretend I wasn't there, that I didn't care. I listened to them clomp from room to room. Then they left. I didn't understand, unless it was drugs, not Lucia or illegals, they were looking for. After, I stayed standing, frozen in the corner, for almost 2 hours more. Only after Carlos came back, I forced my ass to sit down. Then, my whole body shook. My Vargas cousins worried. Worried about Migras. Worried about INS. Worried about rent. They hung blankets over the windows so the house was like night, even when the sun was out. Every day, it was time to put Lucia's things in boxes. Put the boxes on the street. Mani! She's not one of us, they said. I said, please, let's wait until the end of the month. But I understood. They were afraid of being sent back to their countries, the ones Americanos like to visit so much. We watched TV, local news. Hector liked a chica named Mindy Griffin, who reported on Channel 9. She had crazy blowout hair that swooped around her face like a golden halo. Hector said she had a beautiful mouth, heart-shaped, got off on the way she moved her lips. One day, it was a 7-year-old girl attacked by a pit bull, then a gas leak on Maine, or a 3-alarm blaze pulverizing some old Baptist church in White Plains. The handiwork of an arsonist, said Mindy Griffin. What is handiwork? Said Serge. What is arsenic? Said Susie. Hector said bad news may as well come from a pretty face. Carlos said right. And blonde hair, and tight blazers, and big boobs. One day, we found an envelope in the mailbox. It was full of cash. I counted 2 months' rent, exact. From Lucia's sister, said Mrs. Gutierrez, who lived in the basement apartment of the house next door. Mrs. G always wore the same terry cloth bathrobe and dark glasses and smelled like vitamins. Be careful, Mani. Your cariña is trouble, she told me, when Lucia first moved in. I shouldn't have cared, but her words upset me. The way she said them so matter-of-fact. We shared the same landlord, a bald guy named Harry, who wore little round glasses and owned a bunch of houses on our street. Nyanyo knew we weren't cousins, but didn't care, as long as we paid rent on time. Mrs. G was the only one of us who dared complain to him about the busted heat or clanging pipes or the heaps of garbage piled up in the back alley that never seemed to get taken away. Every morning, she swept the sidewalk in front of our houses, chased the cockroaches and mice with a broom. ¡Qué vergüenza!, she said. ¡Disgrace! She coughed, tapped her chest with two fingers, complained of black mold in the walls. Like a poison, making me sick. But she always waved to me when I left for work. She liked me, because one time I helped make party banners for her grandniece's quince. I gonna get things fixed around here, she said. Don't you worry, Manny. For some reason, that made me feel good, knowing Mrs. G kept eyes on everyone in the neighborhood. My boss and I painted signs and shop windows all over the county. I liked the work, but the driving made me nervous, though boss almost always drove. The only one of my Vargas cousins with a real driver's license was Carlos. He got his in Oregon, using a fake social security number he'd bought from a guy at a Burger King. I'll get you one, he said. No big deal. But I wasn't all that comfortable with lying. Every month, I send money home to Ecuador. Cash rolled in T-shirts with cracked logos or superheroes. Ricky and Juan liked X-Men best. Freddy got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Took weeks, even months, for a package to reach them. I always worried it would be lost. But it wasn't only for money I was in the U.S. of A. Mommy hoped I could find a way to bring my youngest brother to this country. Poor Freddy. Born retrasado. But that didn't matter in America, Mommy said. In America, his kind are special. They treat them well. And no one accused a woman of carrying the spawn of the devil, and doctors would still give him the operations needed to fix his heart. They take a piece of muscle from the leg and mold it like clay, she said. Then they drill a hole in the chest. ¿Verdad? I saw it on TV. I didn't tell her I'd never seen a doctor in America. Not even the time I sliced my hand open, thumb to wrist, falling out of a second-floor office window. Boss drove me to the hospital, but I refused to get out of the truck. I don't trust hospitals, I said. It's just the ER, he said. But he could tell I wouldn't budge. In the end, he had to bring me back to the shop, wrap my hand in bandages himself. 1 month later, Lucia returned. Chinita's skin was brown. She had a small belly. Rubbed it all the time. At first, I thought it was the water. I wasn't used to the water. But then I knew, she said. Of course I knew. She'd vomited every day, she said. In the cafes of Quito, at the markets in Otavalo, on the bus to Atacames, in the sands of Sua, on the sides of the streets of Esmeraldas. We made love. Her eyes glowed, her brown skin too. She was giddy like a breeze. What will she look like? She said. How do you know it's a girl? I said. She told me, she said, giggling. I pushed my ear to her belly button. Didn't hear anything, so I licked it. Chinita slapped me, but we laughed. I didn't really believe it. There was no sign of this human supposedly growing inside her. No proof it belonged to me. And Lucia was different from the other girls I'd been with before. Confident she could get whatever she wanted. I suppose this was part of being American. I wondered if I loved her, but it didn't seem like the kind of thing that should take so much thinking. I always imagined I'd just feel it, and know. You have a big family? I asked her. Just a sister, she said. Are you close? We used to be, she said. And now? She was quiet. She patted her middle, puffed up her cheeks, and let out a sigh. She doesn't approve of me anymore, she said. She lives in Switzerland. I remembered how the sister had looked at me, checking me out, like I was a bug under a microscope. And your mommy and papi? Lucia shook her head. Not sure why I didn't mention her sister's visit, or the envelope with the cash, but it didn't feel right. Clearly she didn't care to talk about her past. This much I understood about other people's families. They were complicated. You didn't pry. When I was 13 years old, I dreamed I would have 6 babies. In the dream, I was chasing a rabbit, but it disappeared into the ground. I got a shovel, dug up the ground, but I unearthed a crying baby. Soon as I picked up the baby, the rabbit reappeared, so I dropped the baby and went chasing the rabbit again. I dug up 3 girl babies and 3 boy babies before finally I caught the rabbit. I brought them all to my house with a wheelbarrow. While I boiled the rabbit to make soup, the babies crawled outside and cried. Then I fed them soup, and they stopped crying, came in, and sat around a big table. Multiplied until there were so many, I couldn't keep track of them. That's really creepy, said Lucia. I love babies, I said. It was true. Ever since that dream, I'd imagined it. 6 shiny faces around the kitchen table, slurping hot soup. This seemed to cheer her up. So you're happy? She said. Are you? Yes. I squeezed her hand, but I was nervous. Afraid. I worried I could not be a proper father without papers. Freddy was mommy's last baby. She had 2 before him who died at birth. Twins. The first was blue, coiled like an earthworm, not bigger than a mouse. The second was alive, a baby boy, 6 pounds on the butcher scale. His mouth opened, but he didn't cry, couldn't fill himself with air. Tia Camila cleared his nose with an eyedropper, pumped his chest, sealed his mouth with her lips, tried to inflate him like a balloon. His tiny limbs thrashed, his body jerked. A minute later, he lay still. We buried the small one in the garden. Papi marked the site with a stone. Mommy named the second one Alamar. It meant to the sea. Mommy loved the sea. She wrapped him in white linen, brought him to Canoa, where we hired a fishing boat. Papi and I rowed. Juan and Ricky couldn't yet swim, so Mommy hitched them each to empty milk jugs, scared to death they'd fall in. When we were far enough out and people on shore looked like mosquitoes, Mommy dipped the body into the water. I watched it drift away, bouncing on the waves. Your brothers are a part of you, said Mommy. When one hurts, you all hurt. Her voice was quiet. Far away. She sat in that boat, still as a statue, held my hand while Papi rowed. Juan hiccuped to hide his sobs. Ricky asked Mommy what would happen to us brothers when Alamar got eaten by a fish. Shut up, pendejo, I said. When we returned to the beach, we made a picnic. Papi caught 2 bass, grilled them on a fire. Juan and I covered Ricky with sand. Mommy pretended to be a monster, fingers creeping toward us as we sucked on sweet granadillas. She captured us, punished us with her tickles. When the sun got too hot on our sticky bodies, we ran into the surf. Ricky cried when he got stung by a jellyfish. It's Alamar, he said. 5 years later, Mommy gave birth to Freddy at home in a round wooden tub. Said he slipped out and swam instantly like a fish. When he bounced up for air, his cry was so loud it startled her. She fell back and hit her head. Tia Camila grabbed the baby with a towel, handed him to Mommy when she woke a few seconds later. "It's a boy," she said. Mommy was so happy her baby was alive and breathing, she didn't notice anything wrong. Then Tia Camila showed her the gaping tongue, the flat profile, the up-slanted, too far apart eyes. "He's not right," said Tia Camila. "Hush," said Mommy. They brought him to a medicine man who lived up in the mountains.
"Best a dunce," said the man. "Worst a deadweight. That child is a curse."
Mommy grew angry. What did he know, this old man who wouldn't even look her in the eye? But I noticed it too, how the women at the market lowered their gazes whenever we all walked by. It was then, I think, the idea came to her that I should go to America.
"Hijo, a man's duty is to his family," she said. "You will help your brother. There is no such thing as a curse."
I felt proud, full of purpose. I felt afraid, confused, but I nodded. I was 14 years old. As far as I was concerned, pregnancy was a woman's business. I didn't need to know the details. Babies have been born since the beginning of time, in caves and fields and taxicabs. I figured they know what to do.
"Stop joking, Manny," said Lucia.
She punched my arm. Chinita was determined to prepare. She took special vitamins, went to bed early, weighed herself every day. She practiced breathing, drank herbal teas, joined chat rooms on the internet. Every week, she'd report something new she just learned. "The baby is the size of a grape today. The baby has fingernails now. Soon, the baby will make pee. Later, her body will be covered with fur." Mrs. Gutierrez brought her rambutans.
"Sour fruits are good for baby skin," she said. "Backyard organic."
She bent down to pat Lucia's belly, which lately had seemed to become a public space.
"Fantástico," said Lucia.
She inhaled. "Thank you." Mrs. G did manage to grow an amazing assortment of tropical fruits and vegetables in the tiny patch of dirt behind her house. Sometimes Lucia helped her pull weeds or spread fertilizer. She said it was good for the baby to know the earth.
"The bugs, the mold, don't you worry," said Mrs. Gutierrez. "I call Harry. I tell him he has to clean up this place. I put roach bait all over, but with that trash in the alley, nothing I do is gonna help."
She smoothed Lucia's hair. She seemed to have forgotten her earlier warning to me. Babies changed people's minds.
"With this precious one, you be careful," she said,
waving her broom in my direction, as if already I'd done something wrong. Lucia asked if I would come with her to see the doctor. I said I didn't like hospitals.
"It's a doctor's office, Manny," she said. "No police, no guards."
But I was afraid the doctor would ask me questions, personal questions.
"Trust me," she said. "It will be okay."
I held her hand in the waiting room. She was right. It was not what I'd expected. The room was painted a bright, cheerful yellow with vertical white stripes, and two monkeys, a zebra, and three giraffes. I liked the animals, the way the room felt like a cage.
"It's not a cage," said Lucia.
"What do you mean?" I said. She pointed out that the stripes rose only partway up the wall.
"It's a crib, you silly," she said.
A nurse brought us to another room. Pale green walls with photos of pregnant women holding their naked bellies, smiling peaceful smiles.
"Who looks like that?" I said.
"Not me," said Lucia. She climbed onto the exam table, lifted her shirt.
"Yoo-hoo in there," she said.
A tall woman,
wearing a long white coat, walked in.
"Hello, doctor," I said. I stuck out my hand.